You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Alan Bibee has been in the bluegrass limelight since the early 80s. As an original member of the New Quicksilver, Third Time Out, and Blue Ridge, Alan is now leading his own band for the last 8 years, Alan Bibee and Grasstown, and has become a top-rated mandolin player, winning the 2019 and 2020 IBMA Mandolin Player of the Year award. Alan is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Alan. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you, Greg.
Good to talk to you, sir. I'm glad we got a chance to catch up and talk some bluegrass. How's things going in South Carolina?
Not too bad. A little bit rainy for me, but other than that, it's going pretty good.
Yeah, right. I guess we're further up enough. We're further closer to the mountains. We're going to get some snow here. I guess you guys are just getting rain, but it's that time of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Where I'm from in North Carolina, my family's calling me, telling me they're getting a little snow every now and then.
Yeah. Well, it's always that February, March. You never know what to expect. So
that's right.
We'll just have to take it as it comes.
That's right.
Are you guys getting to play any?
We really haven't. Other than in the studio, we played one gig since the last, since everything shut down in March.
Yeah, wow.
We played pretty steady to the middle of March, and then that was it.
Yeah. What's it looking like? You think you guys are going to get out this year? Any indication yet?
I hope so. We have quite a few shows, but they tend to keep falling by the wayside a little bit. But we do have one. I know in Branson, Missouri. I think it's going to happen. They did the thing at Silver Dollar City.
Yeah.
Bluegrass month, but I think they've scaled it down. But I think I think that will happen in May.
Yeah.
And I hope Bean Blossom and a few other things happen in June. But I still think it'll probably be somewhere between 25% and 40%. I would imagine so too.
Yeah.
Regular year.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating for everybody I know. So we're certainly crossing our fingers on that one.
Definitely.
So you have been playing bluegrass music for a few years, right?
Yeah, quite a few years.
When did it all start for you?
When I was five, but really, I guess before then, because my dad had grew up loving bluegrass, and my grandpa, they went to a Primitive Baptist church that didn't have music, but they both loved bluegrass.
Yeah.
And dad always wanted to play. So we met my mom when they were 16, and her brothers all played. They needed a mandolin player, so he started playing mandolin with them. And at the time, they had these contests in North Carolina called Fiddler's Convention, and Virginia, Southern Virginia.
Sure.
I guess for a long time, even before I came along, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
But they were, I mean, it seemed like they were almost every weekend, probably averaged every other weekend, somewhere within a 2 or 3 hour radius, there was a Fiddler's Convention,
Yeah.
And it was great. I'm sure I was going to them in the womb, I imagine. I got plenty of that at a really young age. But I remember my dad took me to see Bill Monroe in our next town over
where
we live.
Yeah.
When I was five, and he was on the back of a flatbed truck, and he had to hold me on his shoulder so I could see. And I just remember thinking, gosh, that's the most awesome thing I've ever seen. On the way home, I said, "Man, that's what I want to do." He took me home. He showed me some chords. And he said, "I started chopping right away," which sounds impressive, but I'd probably heard so much music by that time.
Yeah,
it probably might have been a disappointment if I hadn't started chopping in time.
Yeah.
So that's how it got started, and then eventually we got into the. My dad told me he must have loved banjo from the start, because he said, "When you get to be a better mandolin player than me, I'm going to start playing banjo."
So, oh, okay.
By the time I was eight, he said I was better than him. So he started playing banjo, and we started playing all those. That's about the time I started playing those contests.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And it was really great training, because most of them judged you within a band format. So you were learning instrumentals, but also how to play within a band. So it was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you kind of began professionally, I guess, if that's the right word, in the early 80s, kind of moving into playing out with different bands, and actually were able to kind of help start some of the bands that were instrumental kind of in that second wave of bluegrass.
Yeah, well, I've always kind of put my official date of starting really playing nationally was like in 1985 with New Quicksilver when I was 20. But before that, when I was 15, I was playing it. Me and Sammy Sheeler were playing in a band together. He was older than me, and it was the first band that I'd played in that got out of the, we went out of our region. We went out 6 or 7 hours out to play places like Buddy's Barbecue and all that kind of stuff in Knoxville. But so we had a band together with Barry Barrier, who's also a lot of people know. And but then after that, I was in a band with Wes Golden for a while. So yeah, if you count all of that, I've been playing professionally kind of at least for around 40 years.
Wow. And you spent some time with Third Time Out, right?
Yeah. After the New Quicksilver broke up, we started that group and played for about 3 years, I guess.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years later, Russell and Rain called me and asked me would I be interested in doing something. And I said, starting a band? And I said, well, sure. So we got together and didn't have a banjo player at the time. And they asked me if I know of anybody. And I've been playing, some local gigs and shows with Terry Balcom. And I said, well, I think Terry maybe would be, he might be I know he'd be a great one if he wants to do it. So he ended up taking the gig. So that was the original band, was Russell and Ray and Mike and me and Terry Balcom.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. And then Blue Ridge, right? Blue Ridge?
Yeah. Well, after that, I played one summer with and recorded one project with Lou Reed. And then that was why we were getting Blue Ridge together, which was actually the New Quicksilver.
Oh, okay.
But at the time when we started that band, it was the New Quicksilver just under the Blue Ridge name.
Uh-huh.
And it finally morphed into being me at the end. At the last few years, it was me and Junior Sisk and Eddie Biggerstaff and some guys. But it was that was over a 10-year run for
wow.
me there in that band.
Have you always been able to pursue this kind of from a full-time perspective?
Yeah, that's the only thing I've ever, except for maybe that time, maybe the couple years in between New Quicksilver and Third Time Out, I was doing other things and still playing music. And at one time I was going to school playing music and working a job too. But other than that, that's all I've done since I was 20 years old or before.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been able to be a part of those groups that are in the collective mind of bluegrass. People know those groups and the contribution that they have made to the music industry, and then have been able to get win some awards and some industry accolades with bands and yourself personally. Do you have any sense of what makes the difference? What has allowed you to be able to be on the cutting edge of all of this and be able to be out there and in front? And there's so many other players from small towns and those kinds of things that would love to have the same success. If someone was asking, what's the path to be able to realize that kind of success, what would you say to them?
I think a lot of it is just being stubborn and not ever taking no for an answer and just being determined. I mean, I had a first cousin that played music also, and he's played professionally all his life, but he plays at a venue down here in Myrtle Beach it's called the Carolina Opry.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And but he played with a band called Boot Heel, who were Louisa Branscombe was in that band.
Yeah.
But he got out and played, and I remember one point he was 4 or 5 years older than me, and he was learning and helping me with technique and stuff. And I remember one time him telling me, "I'm going to be the best mandolin player in the world." And I just remember thinking to myself, "No, you're not, because I'm going to."
Yeah.
And I said, I just had that determination.
Yeah.
And, I just had that. always had. Even when things look bad, you know, so if something goes wrong or, you know, people quit the band or something like that, it used to kind of get me down, and it would, but and for a minute I might be down, but then the next day I'd wake up and I'd be like even more determined to do it. I just think, I know everybody is, and I'm sure, you know, I praise the Lord for any gifts, for all the gifts he's given me, for sure. But I've also put in a gazillion hours playing.
Right.
I mean, I play, and I work on technique and doing things right, playing slow, working on my technique, getting it right, not just trying to get everything up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to toot my own horn, but you got to want it bad to really get really good on your instrument. And you know, we're talking about being the best. I know that's so subjective, but I think what I probably meant was I was going to be the best I could be.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. 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 Well, the industry sure has acknowledged that a few times for you. So the hard work has paid off.
Well, I'd say I do. Somebody asked me one day, you know, did that really, you know, that really mean that much to you or whatever? And I said, you know, I guess some people want me to say, no, it don't really mean that much, but it does. I mean, when you've worked all your life that hard for something and looked up, you know, in a category with Sam Bush and people that I really looked up to when I was growing up, and all the guys like Ricky Skaggs, you know, and now I'm buddies with all those guys.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
You know, it does mean a lot when you're recognized as a peer, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and it certainly points to your determination and that drive to be the best. And then when you can realize it's, you know, like an Olympian winning a gold medal, you know, it's kind of that prize at the end of the contest where you, yeah, okay, so all that work did actually pay off. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
So tell me about Grasstown. When did that get started, and what led you to launch out on your own and create your own band?
Well, actually, you know, I guess it's been a kind of crazy career for me, because I've always been a partner in every band I've ever been in.
Okay.
So but when I was a partner with New Quicksilver, I didn't know anything about the business. I was just there. I was just so young. I was just happy to be out playing. I didn't know anybody, you know. but all that, my third time out being a partner in that band, I got to see more and more and learn more and more about the business. And so by the time we started Blue Ridge, I was handling all the business even then. That's been, you know, that was 97, so that's been a long time ago
now. Right, okay.
So I had pretty good training at that. But when we started this Grasstown, it was me, Steve Gulley, and Phil Ledbetter, and that was in, that was around 06, end of 06 or something like that now. So it's been a while. And then it, you know, as bands do, they morph into what they are. In the last 6 or 7 years, it's been Alan, Bobby, and Grasstown, and we just got some great folks in the band, and it's been a great experience.
And you guys have released how many records?
We've released, this is our sixth record.
Right.
And
the new one is Hitchhiking to California. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's the name of the project. And that's a tune that I recorded with New Quicksilver back in 1985.
Okay.
And it was a tune written by Wes Golden, who I got to play with after he quit Boone Creek, and I was the biggest Boone Creek fan in the world.
Wow, that's cool.
So I was super nervous to even be playing in a band.
Yeah.
With him, but we got to be really good friends, and we've co-written a lot of tunes now, and he's just a wonderful, talented songwriter, player, and singer. But they'd actually, I didn't know, Phil Ledbetter's my, he's got all these live tapes of Boone Creek, and I've got a few, but he's got a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually performed Hitchhiking to California, but never recorded it. So when we got together, you know, with New Quicksilver, it was on Terry Balcom's radar, so
yeah.
We ended up recording it. I've always thought about recording that again, but got it, that original recording, not because of me, but because these other guys were so great. That original recording is super strong, so
right.
I knew it had to be super strong after that cut of it, you know.
Yeah, and that's the it's just out, right? It hasn't been out long.
No, it just came out the 29th.
Okay, good.
And that was the first single off of it. We've been lucky enough and fortunate that it's been number one 4 times.
And I think I read this is your first record on Billy Blue Records, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Our first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're really, having a great time being with Billy Blue Records. They've been, everybody has just been super. So, it's been a great experience.
Who's playing with you on this record?
It is our banjo player that's been with us since at least on half of our records now. He's been with us about 6-7 years for the most part. Justin Jenkins from around Lexington, Kentucky. He's
mm-hmm.
He's a super banjo player. I mean, he's a younger guy. He's like 34, but he plays like I guess he lives something in the water up there around him and J.D. Crow. They're big buddies.
Yeah.
But man, he's incredible. And Zach McClam has been with us about 6 years now on the bass. He's been the bass player of the year at Stigma the last 2 years.
That's awesome.
But that was really good. And our guitar player, Tony Watt, he's been with us about 3 years now. And then our newest member that's on this project is Katie Penn, who a lot of bluegrassers know. She had her own band called Newtown for a long time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And just a great, great singer and fiddle player.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. They had some great songs. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about this record. What's the feel of it? Still more in the traditional line? How many of these are originals? What do you got going on this record?
Well, we got it's a pretty good mixture. I think it's a great. Some of it's very varied. After the our last gospel album was super successful, and it's still funny because when we started that album, I told everybody that at the time, I didn't think gospel albums got played as much as regular albums.
Right.
At that time, I said, so we're just going to be, it's just what we think the Lord's led us to do. And we'll do it for that reason because, that's probably what it's going to be. And it's turned out to be our probably most successful record that we've ever had.
Wow, that's awesome.
Won Gospel Record of the Year last year, so that goes to show you there.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
Yeah, so this album, we decided not to really put 2 or 3 gospel, but we just put one gospel tune on that I had an idea for and had about half, 3/4 of the way written. And
okay.
I'm really getting pleased with Ronnie Bowman. We met when we were 16. I kind of got him into bluegrass. He tells me sometimes he don't know whether he should be mad or love me because of that, but... So we write together a lot. He helps me finish a lot of tunes. So we wrote a gospel tune on there called When He Calls My Name.
Uh-huh.
And then we actually decided to ask Wes about helping going back and writing a third verse for Hitchhiking to California to change it up a little bit, make it a little bit longer too. And
uh-huh.
Wes was all totally cool with that. So me and Jerry Sally co-wrote the new version of that with him.
Oh, cool.
And then my dad, I mentioned, passed away a couple of years ago now, and I wrote this song just really as a therapeutic thing for me,
you know.
And I had to have it on a tape, and I sent it to the guys really accidentally. And when I got to the studio, they were all like, man, we got to do that.
Oh, cool.
It's called Daddy and Me, so we've done that on there. And Jerry Sally helped me finished that one too and improved it some. But then we have other tunes that just some great songwriters, Craig Market, Our new single is Blue Collar Blues, which is already doing super well, and it's written by Jerry Sally and Rick Lang, two of my favorite guys and songwriters.
Yeah.
People are really accepting that really well. And we have a tune on there that I still don't know where I must have heard this, because I was one of those guys that grew up in a bluegrass music family, and I never knew there was anything other kind of music other than bluegrass till I was 8 or 9. I think I heard a Buck Owens record.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that's all bluegrass.
Yeah.
But I had it on my mind thinking about songs. We were still a song or two, maybe short, but we had plenty of songs. But I woke up one morning and this tune hit my mind, and I don't know where I must have heard it somewhere, but it's the Super Tramp song called Long Way Home.
Oh yeah, right, sure, I love that song. Okay.
So I took it to the studio and I said, guys, y'all probably gonna think I've lost my mind, but let's just give it a try. So
yeah,
we did, and it really worked on it, and kind of I think it started like Jerry. They loved it. We almost made it the second single, but we thought we may go a little traditional. That's a little bit far out for us, but
yeah,
I think it came out really good.
That's great. So, I'll have to go listen to that one. I didn't get to that one on the track list, but that's awesome. I grew up with those bands in the 70s and 80s, so I remember them well.
right. So I guess I did hear it, but then I have one song in particular that Katie's singing. It's the only song she's singing on this album, but you probably remember Jake Landers, great songwriter, and he played music with Herschel Sizemore, who he's like my godfather.
Uh-huh.
Me and him we found out we're related somewhere down the line.
Oh, awesome.
My grandma is a Sizemore, so. But anyway, they played music together for a long time. And then we recorded Waves of Sorrow with You Quit Silver, and Jake wrote that song. And then I found out, I didn't find out until recently, because he never said anything, but he would send me songs all the time. He passed away a few years ago, but he'd sent me a CD before he passed away of a new song that he had written.
Hmm.
And just last year I went to that CD, and this song hit me, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's such a cool song. And then I got to read his bio, and he had written Down by the Waterfall, from you know, the Country Gentleman did.
Yeah, okay.
And also Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine.
Really? Wow.
Yes, like Bill Monroe and the Kentucky Headhunters.
Yeah, yeah.
Later. So, I mean, he has really written some major tunes, and I didn't know that, and I wish I could let him know that we were cutting this song before he passed away. But he was just another great guy,
yeah,
and great songwriter.
Yeah.
But it's called I don't know when is the name of the tune that he wrote on there.
Okay. Wow.
So then we got an instrumental also on there that our banjo player wrote. We always do mailing instrumentals, so he had this great banjo instrumental, so I thought we should do that this time.
Yeah. Well, I love all the backstories of these songs, and a lot of people don't ever get to hear that, and I think it adds so much more depth to these records, you know, when you guys put these records out and I know sometimes they show up in the liner notes, and that's great too. And I think there's added value when a musician or the creator of the record actually gets to tell these backstories. So I appreciate you adding that commentary to the story of the album, because I think it adds to it for sure. So
yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So again, the new record is Hitchhiking to California, and tell people where they can get in touch with you, where they can find the record, what's the best way to track with you guys and maybe catch a show.
Okay. You can check us out on grasstown.com. That's grasstown, one word with an E on the end. And you can find out what's going on with the band, and you can definitely order as many CDs as you like off of there.
The whole case, right?
And, that's right. You can find out where we're playing, and hopefully when we're playing, it won't be too long before we're playing some. And I have a mandolin camp that will be in our sixth year this August down here at the beach, that's going to it looks like it's going to happen. So
we're
looking forward to that. Yeah. So all kinds of things still going on, luckily.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about your music and this new record, and we certainly wish you well with it and look forward to crossing paths out there sooner than later.
I hope so. I sure appreciate it, Greg. Thank you for everything you do for the music, buddy.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Jabbers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.